Piero Ciampi with Il Vino, obviously an Italian. So a glass of Chardy or Shiraz? Not in Italy. Rita Ehrlich's recently returned from a visit to northern Italy, and she's just tasted some Italian wines with sommelier Ken John. What they both like is the range of Italian grape varieties, and it's not a Chardonnay among them.
Let me introduce you to some of my friends. Rondinella, Corvina, Garganega, Nebbiolo, Arnais. They're Italian, as you might have guessed. They're all grape varieties. Among the hundreds of native Italian grape varieties, they've got a word for it in Italian, autoctoni, or autochthonous in English. Not a word we often use, but it's common in Italian wine circles. In the discussions about wine in France and Italy, there's a great division. The French talk about terroir as the deciding factor, the patch of land where vines are grown and its distinctive flavours. The Italians talk about autochthonous grapes, those grape varieties that have, as it were, settled in a particular area and flourish there. In both countries, what grows where has a legal standing that's taken very seriously. In Italy, there are DOC and DOCG wines. DOC, Denominazione d'Origine Controllata, means that the wine is made of the variety that's accepted in the recognised area. It's a guarantee of origin and quality. DOCG is a stage up in terms of quality. Italian cooking is regional, as we all know. Every region, even every city, every village has its own specialties. It's much the same with wine. Every region has its own grapes. In Piedmont, for example, we have Barbera and Nebbiolo, Dolcetto, Fresa, among others, and white wine varieties such as Cortese and Arnais. It can be confusing. Barolo and Barbaresco sound like grape varieties, but they're places, quite close actually, where wine is made from Nebbiolo grapes. Piedmont, up in the northwest of Italy, has some of the most interesting stories in Italian winemaking. 60 years ago, things were looking grim. It was then a poor area, and a succession of bad years meant that things were looking terrible. There's only so much Barolo Chinato that can be made, wine that was spiced to make it drinkable. Then the temperatures rose a bit, the grapes ripened properly, and the American market discovered these big, often uncompromising wines. American wine writers wrote about them, big money was made, and the industry was looking good again. Winemakers had enough money to reinvest in their vineyards and equipment. And at some point, there was encouragement to improve growing and training. Though I should add that a winemaking school has been going in the small town of Alba since the late 19th century. Every region has its story and its grape varieties. In Alto Adige, up near the Swiss border, they make fabulous white wines and a red called La Graine, which has one fan in Australian winemaking, but it's generally left to its own region. Alto Adige used to be really cold, its vines buried under snow in winter, but they're worried now because it's not as cold as it was, and frost kills vines in a way that snow doesn't. At the other end of the country, in Sicily, there are vines, they say, were brought by the Phoenicians, not Venetians, but Phoenicians, going back a couple of thousand years. In Sicily, they're investing very heavily in their wineries, and the results show in some brilliant white wines and reds like Nero d'Avola. Then there are all the varieties that grow in Tuscany and in the Veneto. I've been tasting a range of Italian wines with Ken John, sommelier and wine buyer. I first met him when we were all mad about Australian and French wines, but we keep tasting and drinking and learning. We've just tasted Verdicchio from the Marche, Cannonau from Sardinia, Nebbiolo, Garganega, and something called Nuragus from Sardinia that I'd never even heard of. Delicious. Ken, what interests you so much about Italian wine?
The individuality that Italy provides. Each particular sub-region, almost village, has a particular slant on their own grape variety that they're proud of, how they make them, and, of course, the food that they produce locally to combine with them.
Do you think Italian grape varieties have a place in Australia?
Yes, they do, and it's becoming more so that there are slowly investigations are being made. One of the good things about the possibility of Italian varieties in Australia is that there are a number of varieties that are quite happy to be treated to large amounts of sunshine, which of course is what we have in abundance. So it's about finding the right varieties for the right geography.
Can you give us a couple of examples?
Well, Nero d'Avola is starting to find its own place, and there seems to be a little bit of that happening in McLaren Vale. You mentioned Lagrain before. There are certainly one, I think maybe two producers of Lagrain. As you mentioned, Lagrain likes to be very cold, and they've tried to emulate that here. Regrettably, the resultant wine was more expensive than its Italian brothers.
Even imported.
Indeed, that's right. So, but also the classic variety that we tend to forget about is Trebbiano. Trebbiano has a very important place in Italian winemaking, and here it gets treated somewhat disrespectfully.
Shabbily, even.
Even, indeed.
Because it was regarded as the kind of workhorse white grape.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, if you can recall, Mitchelton was built on the basis of Trebbiano, which was neutrality was what was required for sparkling wine, and that all unfortunately came rather unstuck.
Oh, it did too. But while we're mentioning sparkling wine, the most obvious grape variety to talk about, Italian, that's been transplanted here is Prosecco.
Oh, is Glera.
Yes.
Yes, we'll have an immediate argument about should it be called Prosecco, should it be called Glera. It is now called Glera officially, and of course we have the discussions between governments about the use of the word Prosecco.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, as happened some years ago with world trade agreements.
Indeed.
And Friuli lost the right to talk about Turkey, which stayed with Hungary.
Indeed. And it's, you know, it's champagne writ large again in terms of the fight for that particular title. And the people that we're fighting, this is over a free trade agreement now, and it will be fought out on the between the European Union and Australia in terms of the clauses, sub-clauses of the free trade agreement.
Oh, this is going to go on for years, I think.
Well, I think the local growers of Prosecco would like it to go on for years, but I think it may come to a head a bit faster than that.
Do you have any preferred favourite regions in Italy?
Ah, well, you ask that and I'll say, yes, of course I do, but then I keep on thinking they all have a certain levels of favouritism. I love the Veneto region, the parts around Verona, so Valpolicella, Suave, Amarone. Equally in the north-west, as you've spoken about, Piemonte, I've had the good fortune to have stayed in Alba for a couple of holidays, and there is no finer town to be holidaying in to get to experience all that that particular region can offer.
What about the wines of Tuscany?
Tuscany is of course beautiful. The first time I went to Tuscany visiting, I'd come from Piemonte, went down to the train, was met in Florence, and the chap who met me was very experienced in these things, had parked illegally. We were out of the train station into his car and on the road to Castelnuovo Bernardeschi, where we visited a very, very fine Tuscan producer. Interesting story. This man left Lucca after the Second World War. The family had a subsistence farm there, and there wasn't enough produce to feed the family. His uncle had already gone to Canada as an emigre and was driving trucks, so he chose to do the same thing. And he ended up, it's reputed to be one of the very, very wealthy men of Canada, and decided that he would come back and establish a property. So he bought fine land in Chianti, pulled out everything and replanted to make Super Tuscans. Fortunately, the staff that he was working with convinced him that he should start to make Chianti as well, because he had such good land, and so they make it beautiful now. Gran Selezione, that is just to die for.
That's a very nice story.
A wonderful
coming
story.
Home. Mm. Very nice indeed. Every region, I think, has its wines that are meant for the local food, and that's the other thing that interests me about Italian wine, that it's made to be on the table.
Exactly. Recently I visited Le Marche, and we had the pleasure of visiting, I think, 12 different wineries, and each of them had local ladies providing food for us more often than necessarily going to even local restaurants. And the food that they were providing from their kitchens was just absolutely perfect for the particular wines that we were tasting.
What grows goes with what grows, basically.
Exactly. I couldn't, I enjoy matching wine with food, and I always fall back on the concept of what was traditional in terms of produce in the area on a preferably native basis. And that will inevitably match the wine that's being made there.
It's a good lesson, I think. It's a good general rule. Thank you so much for the tasting, and thank you for the talk.
My pleasure, thank you.
That was palate member Rita Ehrlich with the sommelier Ken John ruminating on Italian wine.